Mr. Atkind, reel 20. Mr. Atkind, during August, July, August 1945, you spent about 4 weeks in Theresienstadt. Could you give a brief description of life in Theresienstadt during that time?
Well, we were well fed. I had a room with four other young men in one of the buildings, and life was quite relaxed and quite happy. We were not allowed to leave the area because of typhoid, but after a few days I felt bored, and together with one friend we decided to go outside and to smuggle some fruit from a nearby village, which we did. It wasn't too difficult and it wasn't too dangerous. And when we brought the apples, we sold some of them and we gave some to the hospital, to the people who were sick, who couldn't walk. And it was more or less a game, because after a while I had quite a bit of money, Czech money, and but it was, I didn't need it, the money didn't mean anything to us. Once we were caught by the Russian guardsman, taken to their headquarters, and the other friend sort of had his face slapped. I kept quiet, so they didn't punish me. They just said, you mustn't do it again, and it's forbidden, and go back to...
Was there very much smuggling going on? Was there a black market?
Yes, well, it wasn't smuggling for any profit. It was simply sort of boredom, because there was very little to do, and few of us were learning sort of some languages. One of my friends was learning English, because we thought maybe the possibility that we'll be coming to England was mentioned. I didn't want to learn until the time comes.
Was this organized? I mean, with
no, it wasn't. No, it wasn't organized.
He would just
no,
do
it was
on
just
his own.
Individually. Some of the young men wanted to go with girls, and then there were some Germans, prisoners of war, and one or two sort of went there and tried to be in charge of a group of German workers and bullied them. So that went on a little bit. I didn't take part in that. And there was no black market as such, nothing to speak of. Then there were people, there were some people who came from Palestine, Jewish people, who were speaking in the squares in the various places, saying that we should go to Palestine. I remember one such speech. The man was saying, the Poles don't want you, the Germans definitely don't want you, neither the French nor other European countries. You should come to Palestine. And I listened to it. But at that time I was already on that list with the younger people. The last day, a day before, we were coming to Prague. We thought we would be flying the following day to England. I gave all my money to a girl who was going to Palestine, because I thought I don't need... she was still staying in Czechoslovakia for some length of time, but I thought that the following day I would be flying to England. As it happened, we spent 3 days in Prague, and I didn't have any kronen, you know, so I couldn't go to the cinema. But one of my friends, who had a lot of money, gave me some, so that we could. But because all that we wanted to do is go to the cinema and see some more of the Russian films, which were very interesting.
How much notice did you have that you were going to be leaving Theresienstadt for Prague?
About a day's notice. About a day's notice. And then, but then nobody knew exactly how long it will take before the planes will arrive to take us to England.
And did you know for sure that you were going to England by this time?
Not until the last moment, when sort of it was all, we didn't care. So long as it wasn't back to Poland, it didn't make any difference to me. And we didn't discuss it very much.
What preparations did you make for going to Prague and on to England?
None. We didn't have many belongings. We had a pair of trousers, a couple of shirts and shoes. We didn't have any possessions to speak of. And we didn't worry about it.
How would you manage in Theresienstadt for changing your clothes and washing clothes and... What kind of facilities existed?
All I remember that it wasn't a problem, but I cannot kind of explain to you. All I remember that we were quite clean. We were reasonably well dressed. It was the summer, which you just needed a shirt and a pair of trousers and shoes. I mean, it was warm all the time. There was a small swimming pool there even, and some of the boys were swimming. And in the summer, you don't think you didn't. I definitely didn't have a pullover, but you didn't need one, and you didn't think about anything like that.
Was it easy to get clothing if you needed it?
In Prague, I got a few things in Prague before I came. In Theresienstadt, you see, I wasn't there at the very beginning. The other boys had few possessions. But I don't really remember needing anything or making an effort to obtain any, you know, anything.
How many of you left for Prague to go?
300. 300 young boys, and amongst us were about 20 or 25 girls.
You mentioned that there were only 20 girls, and of course the survival rate for girls was much lower than that for boys. Had you at this time made any attempt to find out what had happened to your sister, who you'd last seen when you were in the prison at Lodz?
Yes. I met a few girls from Lodz whom I recognized, and they knew my sister. One of them was her school friend, and when I inquired about my sister, she was evasive, and first of all she said, "I don't know what happened," but then another girl said, "Oh yes, I know, she died of TB in the ghetto in August 1944. So that's when I learned about my sister's death. And the girls whom I met, they didn't join the group. They could have joined our group. But one of them became pregnant, and she sort of fell in love with one of the boys, and they were going to Palestine. And the other girl who told me about my sister, she was, I think her intention was also to go to Palestine, and she was a bit older.
How did you feel when you received this news?
I felt very upset. I ran away from her. I didn't want to hear the details. although I don't know if she knew any details, but I somehow didn't want to hear it and I ran away from her.
Had you heard anything about your father and your brother? Although you'd
No, I knew that very few people, I haven't met anybody at that time who came from Kielce, any Jewish people who survived the Kielce ghetto. And during the war I already heard that most of the, or all the Jews from Kielce were taken to the Jewish cemetery and shot. And therefore I didn't have much hope of my father or my older brother having survived. And some distant relatives, well, I thought a little bit about them, but I didn't make any inquiries because there was no one, there was not no sort of office, as they were later in Germany, in places where you could make specific inquiries.
How did it affect you then at this stage, knowing that of your own immediate family, that you were probably the only one who survived?
Well, I accepted sort of everybody else's death. My mother died in the ghetto while I was there. My younger brother died in the ghetto. My older brother and my father, I knew about that more or less during the war, but while I was in the camps, I was hoping that maybe my sister would survive, and that somehow was very painful to get over, much more painful than anything else.
When you left for Prague, how did you travel from Theresienstadt to Prague?
We went by train.
What was the atmosphere like? Were people very hopeful?
Yeah, we were quite cheerful, and we stayed in a school. Is it being summer, the schools were closed for the summer. And it was very sort of cheerful atmosphere, hopeful. We didn't talk about the camps or anything like that. It was just a group of young people laughing, joking, and like an outing. It was very pleasant.
Did anybody give any thought to their future? I mean, were you able to look ahead at all?
No, nobody was worried about the future. You know, I suppose the feeling was we have survived such terrible times. Everything will be wonderful if you have enough to eat. What can happen to you? You know, it was very cheerful. And in Theresienstadt, of course, there was the hospital and people were still dying, those that were too far gone. And that was sad because you felt people survived and then they were kept alive maybe for a week, 2 weeks, or 4 weeks, or 8 weeks, and then they died of TB or exhaustion or some other complications. And that, not that I went to the hospital very often, except when I brought some fruit, but that somehow you felt very sorry for those people, and they were not able to come with our transport, of course.
Whilst you were in Prague, you mentioned you went to the cinema. What else did you do?
Quite a number of times. Yeah, we walked about the city, very beautiful city, so we enjoyed just walking around and going to the restaurants. But the cinemas, the Russian films, which were made during the war, we enjoyed very much. First of all, we didn't see any cinema, any films for nearly six years, and those films, although they were propaganda, they were very well made. Well, we enjoyed them immensely. I don't know what I would feel about them now, but at the time, we liked them very much.
When the time came to go to the airport, how was that whole event organized? Going to the airport and getting onto the plane?
Some coaches arrived and they took us to the airport outside Prague. And again, the weather was beautiful, sunny day, and we were in our, well, no one had more than just a pair of trousers and a shirt. And we didn't realize that once we were high up in the air, the temperature would drop to maybe zero, so that we felt rather cold.
You weren't given any advice on this?
No, some the pilots or the crew gave us some sandwiches, white bread, and this is the first time we saw English white bread, and we thought it was marvelous, although we were not hungry by then, and probably the bread wasn't as good as the one we were eating before, but at the time it was, we looked at it, how white it was, and I think some ham sandwiches we were given and we were eating.
What was the airplane like? What kind of an airplane was it?
They were RAF bombers. We were just sitting on the floor and we got bags in case we were sick, but nobody was sick. And we landed in Holland for refueling, but we didn't. We just got out for half an hour and sat at the airport for half an hour or an hour, and then the plane went on.
What did you do about feeling cold? I mean, were there any blankets or anything?
No, it wasn't too bad. It wasn't a terrible experience, but we got over it quite without any ill effects.
How long was the flight?
We left in the morning, and by the time we arrived, most the afternoon. I'm not certain where we landed, because it was about 2 hours journey to Windermere, to the Lake District, by coaches. And the coaches passed through the Lake District, and we thought how beautiful England is. You know, we sort of passed through very nice areas. I don't know exactly where it landed. I know there were reporters and taking photographs of us as we were jumping from the plane. I didn't use the steps, I sort of jumped down. And there were the flashlights and some reporters were taking photographs of us. And we arrived about 2 miles outside Windermere at Troutbeck Bridge. There were single-story buildings. Designed something to do with the war effort during the war. There were temporary buildings built for either workers who had something to do with the war effort. And we had very nice accommodation, and there was a large assembly hall and kitchen. And we were swimming in the Windermere Lake. The weather was good. We started learning. We started organized classes. We got books, Polish and English dictionaries, and books which were probably designed for the Polish soldiers who landed here. They were good books, and we were learning mainly English, also other lessons we had.
Did you find it difficult to learn English?
No, not difficult. I made an effort. I decided to learn, I don't remember how many words every day, and repeat them. And no, I made a very good progress during the first 6 months. But we stayed in there and for about August until the end of September.
Were people having adverse reactions now that we're out of the situation that they've been through for the last 5-6 years? How are people settling down? Like nightmares or...
I think everybody had nightmares. I think the sort of recurring nightmare that I know everyone had is somehow that the Germans came back and they were trying to run away. More or less this sort of dream, recurring dream, that somehow, how is it I managed to get away and here they are again, I'm again in that situation. And then a sort of a relief when you woke up in the morning. And that kind of dream, it wasn't sort of a nightmare that you woke up screaming. That was the exception, one of our friends. But it was just sort of an unpleasant sort of dream. And then you woke up and, oh, what a relief. It was only a dream. And that became less and less frequent with the passage of time.
Was there any kind of counseling?
Well, one of the men who was in, we had teachers, there was a rabbi who tried to make us, who talked about religion. There was a psychologist who was in charge of us, Mr. Friedman, and he was sort of very quiet. He didn't give talks or discuss with us anything. But we knew that he was a psychologist. I think later when we read what was written about us, we thought it was a lot of nonsense, that it wasn't true.
What was written?
Well, there were some people maybe were hiding food, and it was the exception. There were a few people who were disturbed, but out of the 300, they might have been 4 or 5 that I know of, the vast majority, were not affected in a very bad way. Physically, there were maybe 20 or 30 who had TB, slight TB, which was cured. Nobody died of any disease.
Were you healthy by this time?
Well, healthy, yes, I was recovering quite quickly. I had an X-ray in Prague when I was in the various hospitals, and there was a shadow the size of an egg on my right lung. And strangely enough, for the first year after the war, because I was in Windermere, and then I was outside in Scotland. I was outside Cardross, which was in a very, in the countryside, very beautiful place. I felt well, but then when I went to Glasgow, I did have pains in my chest for quite a long time, but the doctors said that it was not active TB. It was the place where I was hit with the rifle by the German a week before the liberation. But in that part of my chest, I didn't have those pains for about a year after the war, but then I started having them for quite a long time. And yet the X-rays didn't show any active TB.
Has it left any lasting damage physically? Effects?
Well, I cannot. All I knew that I had sort of pains just in the middle of my chest.
Does it affect you now?
Hmm?
Does it affect your health now? what you went through.
I still, whether it is now and then, I sort of feel I still have pain in there. It doesn't affect my health in any way, but I sort of have a pain in just in the spot where I was hit with the rifle. I cannot explain that, but because it doesn't show anything.
Were there efforts made during this term to contact relatives in that?
Oh, yes. Well, the moment I came to England, I knew that I had relatives in Palestine and in America. And I knew that if I contact any one of them, they would be able to contact the others. So what I did, I wrote to the chief of police in Cincinnati, Ohio, and I said that I have a cousin. I mentioned that I survived the war, and I remember that I have a cousin named Reingold, who is a doctor in Cincinnati, and I would be grateful if he could forward my letter and my address to him. And they did, and I soon had a letter from Cincinnati, from my cousin. And very soon I had a letter from his younger brother, who was in the American Army. He was an officer in the American Army. And then I went to meet him in Birmingham. And then I found out from him that my cousins, there were three brothers, first cousins, who survived the Warsaw Ghetto, were in Paris. Well, actually, two of them were still in Poland. One was in Paris, but soon the ones who were in Poland also joined him in Paris. So I established contact with my cousins from Poland, who survived the Warsaw Ghetto, with my relatives in America, who were three cousins and some other distant relatives, and then my uncle from Tel Aviv in Palestine. He started writing to me as well. There were two uncles.
This
happened few months after arriving in... when I was a few weeks after arriving in England.
Did you consider going to live with any of them?
Well, they all offered. My cousins in America said that if I want to come to America, they can help me. And my uncle in Palestine also said, asked me whether I would like to go there. And my answer was that not for the time being. I'll consider it later, but at the moment I want to stay in England.
Why was that? Did you want to stay with
me? I somehow didn't want to become dependent